you've got a new book, your latest book, Railroad Stations of Delmarva. This new book includes a then and now concept in which each page has a historic photo, if you will, of a railroad station next to a photo of what the building looks like now. What makes railroads and trains so fascinating to you?
Well, Kelly, I grew up with them in my backyard. I grew up in Harrington, and literally the railroad tracks were just outside my back window. So, you know, kind of always enjoyed them as a kid, had model trains as a kid. Part of my summer every year was spent waiting on the train that brought the carnival rides in for the fair in July. And as soon as they showed up, Mom knew I was gone to the Rochester unload and I wouldn't be home all day. And, of course, she was okay with that. So, it just has always been a part of my life, so, and I've always enjoyed it.
What were the challenges you faced in writing this book? I believe you said in your introduction, one can only talk so much about a building. So how did you make the topic of trains so interesting?
Well, it wrote itself for a large portion of it. Delmarva was made because of the railroad. If you read articles from back when before the railroad or just after the railroad came, people likened the Delmarva Peninsula to the 1700s. Roads were all dirt. There was really no infrastructure in the communities, no way of getting outside goods really in, nor outside news, nor getting a lot of our stuff out, bringing people in, citizens. It was just... So it wrote itself. I found a lot of stories after the railroad came of how communities grew from nothing, how other communities moved, literally moved buildings to where the railroad came, and what it did for Delmarva. So it wrote itself a lot, but the challenges were finding a lot of it. The second book talks about the number of railroads that did exist at one time and are gone. So finding them sometimes in thickets and woods and... I think it was here. We're a little bit of a challenge.
Gotcha. And you use photos basically to tell the story in a lot of places, right?
I did. Thanks to a lot of people. Yes, I'm curator of the Greater Harrington Historical Society here in Harrington, but so many other museums that I reached out to, little museums in little towns, and I always encourage people, go visit the local museums. You'd be amazed at the history they contain. I sat in Stevensonville's railroad station, which is over by Kent Island, in an August day on the floor with a scanner scanning photos.
Wow.
They have a lot of history, and a lot of them shared it with me, and that was awesome because they were willing to share their collections of photos and stories with me to help me write these books.
Do most of the cities and towns on Delmarva have these little museums that people can go to and learn their history?
Sadly, not as many as I wish. And that's what I always tell people. We're letting our history get away. Because a lot of our history, any older history, I mean, today, my God, everybody has a phone with a camera and everybody has, you know, ways of capturing things. But when you go back to the early 1900s, and photography was an expensive hobby, to be honest. So those stories and those photos are getting lost. And I hear a lot of people that donate artifacts to our museum say, my kids don't want this. My grandkids don't want this. Our youth today just aren't interested in those kinds of things, and they're getting thrown in the trash. So I wish every community would make an effort to preserve their history with a small museum.
You know, I think I'm one of those people. I grew up, I'm from Baltimore, and I grew up in Dundalk, Maryland, in Baltimore. And every Christmas, our local fire department would have a train display. And my brother and I, he's 2 years younger, my brother and I, we couldn't wait to go see the great train display. And now I don't even think about trains. So I think, are there a lot of adults like me that trains were a part of their childhood, but not so much now in adulthood?
Yes, because we don't think of them, as you said. We passenger service ended on Delmarva in 1965, and really that was an experimental train that only lasted 3 months. It really ended in the 50s. So we don't think about the freight that moves up and down. And as a matter of fact, the United States is the largest mover of freight by railroad, by far. But we're one of the worst with passenger service, and that's just because of cars and a lot of other stuff. But we still move the most freight in the world by rail, but we don't think about it. You know, most people think of the railroad, especially in the town I grew up and living in, as, darn it, that thing's across the track. Now I got to wait for 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. They view it as a nuisance. They really don't understand the history of it. They ride past the buildings, the train stations, again, because there's not passenger service, and they're just buildings to them. They're just there. They don't have any of the romance, et cetera, that they did back in the day.
All right, so let's delve a little bit deeper into this book. In the book, you note that there had been 386 railroad stations and stops throughout Delmarva. What time frame was that?
That was from the beginning, which was actually in the 1830s. That was for the very first railroad built up in New Castle County, all the way through the end of, again, the 1950s. After that, there were no new passenger stations built even before World War II. So pretty much the zenith was in the 1910s, 1920s was when you would have seen that largest number of stations.
Gotcha. And what did you find when you started researching these railroad stations?
The unique thing, and that's, as you mentioned it with the book, is I can only talk so much about four walls, is what they meant to the communities, how the communities became or changed with the coming of the railroad. For example, here in Harrington, the state fair that we have every year, there used to be a restaurant in our train station. That's where the first group of gentlemen met to create the state fair. It was more than just, it's where the news came in. It's where your family came. It's where, I mean, you could get a house brought in by boxcar. Bought from Sears, you could have your house built, came in by boxcar. So it's a total different way of researching it when I went into it and found all the different things, the stops and all those kinds of things. But what that station meant to the town, it was their lifeline.
How many of those 386 still exist, and what are they used for?
About 160 exist. I didn't find all of the ones that I was told existed. A couple of them, they're used for lots of things. Some of them are just sitting there and rotting, such as Price, Maryland. I found it back in some trees with vines growing up on it. It had been a house at one time, but it's been abandoned. Other ones are used for businesses, such as over in Cambridge, Maryland. It's a real estate office. That's a very common usage for them. Chestertown is a day spa. If you want to go get a massage and some, you know, cucumbers on your eyes, go ahead.
Wow.
Some of them are used still for business. Train business, such as in Harrington, the train for the Delmarva Railroad, Delmarva Central Railroad, which is out of Pennsylvania. Their main office is outside of Pittsburgh. So that's here. And so it depends on the town. Some of them are museums, such as in Laurel. Laurel's is a very nice museum. So it depends. Cities own them. Private people have moved them to their properties. There's one. I won't divulge it because it is a private person. So they use it as a pool house.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's something I've never heard of before. Hey, I want to remind everybody we're talking to Doug Poor. Doug is an author. He lives in Harrington. He's also the curator at the Historical Society in Harrington. We've talked to him before. He had a book out back in 2019. It was called Harrington Through Time. Now he's got a new book called Railroad Stations of Delmarva. Doug, there was a railroad station in Newport that I believe was put on the National Register of Historic Places, but that was torn down. What happened with that one?
It became an eyesore, and it was left to rot, and so eventually it was torn down. The steps are still there. If you look, and it's hard to see them because they're actually down toward the train tracks, which, of course, that is still an active Amtrak line. You can see the steps and the little wall, and then that's it. That's all that's left. But again, when they were abandoned from passenger service, and what's unique, most people don't realize, UPS and FedEx came out of a thing called Railway Express. That's how you used to get your express packages back in the day. They were brought by train, and then those drivers would leave the train station in horse-drawn or engine vehicles and deliver them to your houses, just like FedEx does today. But when all that service went away, again, in that neighborhood, it became an eyesore, and even though it was on the national list, it had gotten to the point where it just needed to be torn down.
I gotcha. As we've been pointing out, a lot of the railroad stations you highlight are or were here in Delaware. Is there anything particularly interesting that stands out to you about any of them?
There's unique things about all of them, really, whether it's a story, whether it's like the one in Wilmington, that, of course, is named after President Biden now. That one was done by a very famous architect by the name of Frank Furness. He's a very prominent architect, very prominent with train stations. He built and designed over 30 of them. So it really depends. Some of the more unique ones, I like some of the smaller ones because they have such a unique character to them. And again, being the central part of town. Some of the ones that are missing, I've never seen a picture of or something, such as there used to be one behind Dell State. I have never found a picture of that one. I would love, and it was placed there strictly to serve the college. And it was only in service for a couple years. I'd love to see that. People ask me all the time, hey, do you know about this train? I find new trains. I just found one a couple months ago that a stop was there. Come to find out, it was because it was what's known as a whistle stop. Basically, if this person needed to ride the train, it was just placed there because he was a board of director for the railroad, a physician. He lived outside of Lewis. So if he needed to ride the train into the hospital, they picked him up.
Wow.
Yeah, so there's all kinds of unique little stories like that, whether it's the town was named after somebody or just different things that make each station unique to the community or to itself.
What else, Doug, did you find while researching the book that stood out to you as really interesting?
I guess, again, the way it was community. I mean, having lived on, again, with a railroad in my backyard, it's always been a part of who I am, but I didn't quite grasp the importance the stations. I mean, not this time of year, we're pretty much done, but like last month and the month before when they were harvesting corn and pumpkins and squash and potatoes, the way that, I mean, there would be lines of wagons lined up to put their produce on the train cars, how people would take the train to go to a baseball game in Philadelphia. I mean, it was an everyday, very important part of life, whether it was commercial. That never registered with me until I started doing this research, just how much industry and how much impact railroads placed on all of Delmarva, Delaware, at Eastern Shore of Maryland and Eastern Shore of Virginia. Without them, I don't know where this area would have been, but it would have been dramatically different without the railroads.
All right, we noted at the top of the interview that you're working on additional books. What will the upcoming books be about? When can we expect them to be out?
Well, I'm talking with my publisher right now. We've kind of thrown a different couple of ideas out. We've talked about photographing some of the more unique places around Delmarva, lighthouses and old barns and some old buildings. I mean, just kind of like what the character of the peninsula is. I've thought about... I don't know if any of your listeners have ever, or have you ever heard of, there's an actual dialect considered on Delmarva that is unique. It was actually considered one of the original dialects of America. And my grandmother spoke it. You know, it was oral. It was water.
Right.
And that's the truth. And so I've thought about doing some family books on some of the large farms and that kind of stuff, and they've asked me to potentially do one on the Civil War, and so we're in discussions right now. We haven't picked what few topics they are. They're chasing after me, and I say, guys, give me a couple of months off, please. So
next book titled Earl and Water. Hey, we also mentioned, Doug, you're the curator at the Historical Society in Harrington, which is your hometown. Proceeds from all your books going to support the organization's building expansion. Remind us about that project and give us an update.
Update. I need money.
Don't we all?
We're well into the design phase. As a matter of fact, we just approved a contract with an architect and an engineer yesterday to get us to that final point of, okay, we're ready to go to bid. And we've been actively seeking capital project funds from the state of Delaware, from other grant resources, because this is going to be something that obviously our little town can't fund when you're talking probably $2 million. So we're certainly looking for large donations and ways to get us there, and we'll get there. As I've told everybody, Rome wasn't built in a day, and neither is this building, but I don't tell them if, I say when, because I'm a firm believer that, you believe that way, you talk that way, it will come.